United States Court of Appeals in and for the 7th Judicial Circuit. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. All persons having business before this honorable court are admonished to draw near and give their attention as the court is now sitting. God save the United States and this honorable court.
Good morning. First case of the morning will be Rita Gosch versus Carl Ghetto. Mr. Kajusi.
May it please the court, good morning. I'm Phil Krajewski, and I represent Rita Gosch, the plaintiff appellant in this case. All the issues, or the two issues that come before the court, are all based upon the termination of her residency contract at Southern Illinois University School of Medicine in Springfield, Illinois, back in 1999. She was terminated in midterm of a one-year contract that was renewable for 4 years. The defendants in the case are Carl Ghetto, the dean and provost of the school, and Robert C. Kaufman, who was the program director. There's been an extensive history of litigation in this case. We got into this case after the motions, notices, appeals were filed, and we bring strictly two narrow issues to the court. The first one is based on a 1981 discrimination claim contending that she was terminated based upon her national origin, that of being an Indian. And the narrow issue in that case is whether there was evidence of pretext. The other case, the other claim, is a 1983 claim that she was deprived of a liberty interest in her post-termination reputation.
Is it your position that any resident terminated in the middle of the academic year has a claim for deprivation of a liberty interest?
In this particular case, it is our contention because that she was treated differently than two other interns, and we feel that it sent a message there was a public communication that she had done something wrong. There was something urgent about getting her out of there, that she was dangerous.
But there was no evidence that was publicly disclosed. I mean, you know, when it boils down to it, I mean, you're saying that just because she was terminated, that would be the equivalent of a stigmatizing public disclosure, because there's no evidence of a real disclosure here.
Your Honor, I think we need to focus in on the complaint and what was alleged in the complaint. And it's our contention that it was adequately alleged that there was such a deprivation.
Did either of the alleged similarly situated individuals face allegations of conduct that impacted patient safety, such as the allegations against Gosch that she falsified information on patient charts?
Your Honor, I believe that the one that the court found to be similarly situated there wasn't a falsification issue, but there was something that impacted patient safety. And we're not.
Does the record tell us what that was?
I believe the record does, but we're focused in on just the pleading.
If the record does, could you share it with us?
I can't, Your Honor. I'm not sure what that element was, because basically what we're contending is that we have to look at the four corners of the complaint to see what was pled there, and was there a liberty interest pled? This is strictly a pleading issue. And the fact that we think that she pled that she was terminated midterm, and she also pled that this was unusual, that two others were not, they were allowed to go to the end of their term. By going to the end of their term, it was an ambiguous leaving of the university.
But isn't the problem, it seems to me, is that the record provides really overwhelming evidence of deficient performance. And in light of that record, how can isolated comments that were made months earlier be considered to be the actual reasons for any termination here?
Well, I think we have to consider the circumstances of the comments. First of all, the comments were made by the decision maker, the program director, and what the comments did was they identified the problem in the residency program as being her national origin. It was said to her that unlike an American, she had an accent and was an Indian. And it was also said that this was a problem because people are prejudiced and that if you're not white, they won't like you. There was also a corroborating memo that was written on September 23rd by a faculty doctor, Erica Nelson. And that particular memo, the doctor came out and said, I believe there's a big problem in the residency program. And then it went on to identify that problem as being how the residents were treating Rita Ghosh. They were, she said she had personally observed them verbally and emotionally abusing the plaintiff. And then the memo went on to conclude or propose a couple solutions. One solution was they didn't say to address the harassment and try to go to the residents who were harassing her. The proposal was to take her off the OB rotation, remove her from the situation as much as possible, and also to have the faculty doctors deal directly with her so she didn't have to deal with these harassing interns. So the idea of isolation came early on, and she was terminated within 5 months of that. So I think.
Well, and see, that's the problem I have. That memo, as well as those remarks that were made, were well before she was terminated. And then there were so many issues with respect to her performance. So I have a hard time connecting that to the actual termination.
Well, the discriminatory intent does not have to be the only motive, and we contend. We're not contesting the performance issues. She contests them and did contest them, but we're just contesting the discriminatory.
Are you arguing that she did contest that her performance was deficient in many ways?
She did.
That does not come through, I must say, because she certainly seemed to acknowledge her shortcomings, many of them. You know, her copying information regarding cervix dilation, regarding blood pressure, that she hadn't taken, you know, that the nurses had told her about, etc. She doesn't seem to contest those issues.
We didn't bring up the issue of performance in our brief. Basically, we brought up whether or not the court was wrong in not drawing an inference from those statements that there was discriminatory intent. And we found that there is some supporting case law going back to Judge Posner's cat's paw situation, which is cited in the Harrison case in our brief, in that you can attribute a discriminatory motive to a decision maker from a non-decision maker. You can impute that motive. Under the cat's paw line of cases, they look at what caused the decision. And the example of the Russell case we cite was an age case. And in that case, there was a coworker who did not like Russell and expressed age animus, which was in the record. Finally, that coworker delivered an ultimatum to management saying, either fire Russell or I quit. Now, the significance of that was the co-worker's father was the CEO of the parent corporation that had some budgetary control over the employer. And in this case, the court found that was leverage that caused the cat's paw to terminate Russell. Here, we contend that we have an analogous situation in which we have many people in the residency program that were harassing the plaintiff because of her nationality.
They didn't make any demands, though, on the administration, did they?
No. No, that's the nuance from the cat's paw cases. They didn't make a demand, but they did pose a problem. And Dr. Erica Nelson identified it as a problem. It was a real big problem in that memorandum early on. And so we say that the court could have allowed a jury to infer that Kaufman terminated her because she didn't fit in, which was the implication of that one conversation, or because he wanted to solve a problem in the residency problem. It was just easier to get rid of her than it was to go ahead and try to deal with the problem. So we say there was a material issue of fact on the pretext.
So are you saying that the only way the medical school could have avoided a constitutional problem was to let an inept resident continue till the end of the term? That's the only way it can be resolved, because otherwise they run afoul of the Constitution if it's done prior to the date, because then there'll be the inference that the person was inept or had real problems.
I guess what I'm saying is that the medical school could not, if it was strictly decision was made on ineptness, that's one thing. But if the decision is motivated by a discriminatory intent, that's another thing.
So if a resident was inept, it wouldn't be run afoul of the Constitution to terminate them prior to their term?
If strictly inept, no. The contract allowed for that.
The contract allows for inept behavior?
No, Your Honor. The contract allowed for termination.
Okay.
But obviously the contract could not, it did not, allow for firing somebody on the basis of their national origin. And that's what we contend was an inference, and up to the jury to decide the issue. If there are no other questions, thank you.
Okay, thanks. Mr. Dunn?
May it please the court, my name is Mark Dunn, and I represent the remaining two defendants in this action. And I think that's fairly significant, and I wanted to call it to your attention at this time because it relates to one of the first statements that Mr. Krajewski made. Although my disclosure statement lists a number of people that I represent, by the time we got the reply brief done by the appellant, and last Friday when the appellant clearly dismissed everyone except Carl Ghetto and Dr. Kaufman, there was an entity, Southern Illinois University, and a number of people that were defendants besides these two. And now we're down to just these two, and we're down to this, I think, only the possible thing is this Section 1981 claim. And I will say parenthetically, I do not see how this court could be considering this Section 1983 deprivation of liberty claim. The appellant attempted to appeal that late. A panel of this court dismissed that on December 9th. On December 17th, I think it was. These attorneys were in on her behalf before that happened. There was no petition for rehearing. There was no request
was
for rehearing in bank.
But there was an untimely amended notice of appeal.
That's right, and it's
and
over.
That was dismissed. So
and it was brief.
The only thing we're looking at here, it seems, you know, would be the propriety of the, you know, summary
the
judgment.
Section 1981 against Ghetto and Kaufman. And there's nothing in this that has anything to do with Ghetto. He was simply the dean who reviewed everything at the end. The only person that could possibly be there would be Kaufman. And that's where this gets to the interesting question of when Mr. Krajewski begins by saying, I have a Section 1981 national origin claim. Well, most people don't think of Section 1981 as a national origin claim. That's a Title VII claim. And that happened in this case in a very odd way, timing-wise, that I wanted to call to the attention of the court. The plaintiff's original complaint that named the 24 individual defendants, which is in the record at the SA-60, says that her claim is based on national origin. Judge Scott, when she rules, and this is on page SA-16, says that this is a race case based on the plaintiff being Indian. Where Judge Scott got that, I don't know. But what happened is the same day that Judge Scott's opinion was filed, the Title VII national origin case was filed. and was then later consolidated. So National Origin continued as a part of this case, as far as I knew, all the way up until last Friday when the motion was to dismiss everybody and made it clear that Southern was now out of the case. So all you had left at that point, as of last Friday, and I think one of the clerks told me the order was actually entered yesterday doing that, is a Section 1981 claim. And normally there's a case from this court a number of years ago, I believe the name of it is Van Zuckerstein versus Argonne National Laboratories, that cites Supreme Court authority that Section 1981 is not a national origin. It's race or ethnicity. Now, it's difficult in litigation sometimes because those questions tend to spill over onto one another. But at this point, the complaint is national origin. The charge before the Department of Human Rights and the EEOC was national origin. And you've got Dr. Kaufman, really, as the only person left of the national origin cases to which there's probably no jurisdiction under Section 1981. Now, to go to your question, are there any comparables? Mr. Cry, I would point you to 826 and 827, where Judge Mim, in his order, discusses the other people that he considered comparable.
Well, Dr. Sabrina Smith.
Yes, Dr. Smith and Dr. Shaw.
My recollection is that
poor performance.
Judge Mim held Sabrina Smith. Similarly situated.
Yes, but the type of performance that is talked about, she fell asleep. She was the poorest performance in the resident I've seen in 9 years. No indication in the record of the kinds of things that you saw with Dr. Gosch, where she, you know, couldn't do a physical examination, couldn't report the pertinent finds, and couldn't find a woman's cervix during an examination. Copied nurses' notes onto charts, and think of how the lawyer that would defend the hospital on the malpractice case would be looking at that, you know. But in any event, there's no comparability on that score insofar as I can see. Now, on these conversations that they talk about, that I wanted to point out a couple of things. This is not a case where a person said to, for example, you're going to be a judge and you're going to be the first woman judge on the court, and I don't think you can make it because you're a woman. This is a case where someone said to this...
You must have been around when I was nominated.
Matter of fact, I was. But in any event, this might be a case where someone said, judge, you may have some problems as a judge because other people may be prejudiced against you. And that's all that happened here. She came in. There were real live people complaining about what she was doing in the clinics. And they said, let's sit down and talk about this. What are these problems all about? And someone said, well, you know, you have a problem with your speech. You have a very thick Indian accent. Maybe it's that. But the point was, it wasn't because of that you're out. The point was, let's see what we can do to help it. And what they immediately did was create this sort of, I analogize it to a moot court situation, where they put her in with practice patients, which was a result that she liked. Now, what are you supposed to do in that circumstance? You sit down with a person, you try to talk to them, you try to identify maybe some potential problems, and you try to cure it, which is what they did. On the September 23rd memo from Dr. Nichols-Hoffman, I think it's significant that she does not say that this problem is because Dr. Gosch is foreign or Indian. She says it's because she is a foreign grad. Now, you can have Caucasian people that are foreign grad. Half the orthopedic doctors in Bloomington went to school in Tijuana, to medical school. So what? The point is, she recognized and acknowledged in her deposition and throughout that I have three problems here. I have not been in clinics in 8 years. I started this program by my own choice 6 weeks late, and I have a foreign medical education. And all Nichols Johnson did was point out that she is having trouble here and people are criticizing her because of her foreign medical education. And it was a real problem that she acknowledged within 2 weeks of when she started. When they are within 3 days of when she started, for the first time Dr. Kaufman met her, when she couldn't do a physical and when she couldn't report the facts and findings on a physical, She said in her deposition, the reason I couldn't do it is because that's not the way they taught us to do it in India. Now, if you had a law clerk who went to school in France and didn't know how you do cases in the United States, you'd have to show them, this is the way I expect you to brief a case. This is the way I want you to present it. This is who a plaintiff is. There are no solicitors involved, no barristers, you know, whatever it would be, you would have to explain that. And that's simply all that they were doing here, is saying, you have a foreign medical education. It may have been a perfectly fine education for India, but you're in a program in the United States to be an OBGYN practicing in this state, and you're expected to know how to do things that we do for very good documented reasons. All right, so it seems to me that there's simply nothing to that. Now, the last thing that he really didn't mention, and maybe I should just not mention because of that, is this alleged Dr. Kaufman changing his or giving a different excuse for terminating her sometime after the decision. And again, that's one where you look at the facts, and the facts don't support it. The faculty are the ones that asked to consider her. The faculty told Dr. Kaufman at the point where they should have been having their six-month evaluation, and she would have been 6 weeks premature for the six-month evaluation, that we think we need to consider her. We don't think she can do this. We think something needs to happen, and she needs to get out of here. Kaufman was in full agreement. Now, all of that is documented in the charges made against her, her grievance, the hearing of her grievance where she was represented by attorneys, and in the Dean Gatto's findings. Now, her account is that sometime after this, she went to talk to Dr. Coney, and Dr. Coney said to her that Dr. Kaufman said to Dr. Coney that Dr. Kaufman had been told that nobody would work with her. And she says that's an inconsistency in the reasons. That, I submit, not an inconsistency in the reasons at all. I was thinking, what parallel might you have on a court of appeals? You might say, well, we had a rehearing in a bank, and it was a unanimous decision. Oh, I forgot to mention that Judge Mannion wasn't there that day. He disqualified himself. So what? The fact was, there was no question that the faculty that were present at the six-month evaluation all thought she should be gone. And Dr. Coney gave her affidavit about what happened in her meetings with Kaufman. Dr. Coney was cross-examined by Dr. Ghosh's attorneys at the grievance hearing committee. There's nothing that supports that as being an inconsistent position on the reasons for her termination. There is an overwhelming mosaic of evidence, if I can use a term I've seen when you have discussed direct evidence, an overwhelming mosaic of evidence that indicates that this person should not have completed that program. There were people that could have been in danger. There was an academic decision made by specially trained people that she should be out of there, and she was out of there. There was no publication of that whatsoever. So these are the things I wanted to say to you. I hope they're persuasive, and I hope after many years that this will be over with. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Dunn. Mr. Trieste, do you have anything to add?
Just a couple points, Your Honor. We'd asked the court to consider this, the liberty interest in this case, because the plaintiff made her intent to appeal that issue clear in the amended notice.
But that was decided by this court already, though, right?
We're asking you to review this under the first notice of appeal, which was timely, because nobody was misled by the fact that she intended to appeal it, and there was no prejudice shown. So we would ask you to consider that. The other point that was made, that this was not national origin discrimination, but that it was made because she was a foreign grad, kind of misses the point of the conversation with Kaufman. That was all related to her skin color, her accent, the fact she wasn't American. There was nothing about foreign grad or the quality of foreign education. It's strictly related to her being an Indian. And I think the memo could be construed also just to confirm its national origin. The word foreign grad, I think, counsel attaches too much significance to. And also, counsel has taken some things and tried to argue there's more evidence in the record, there's other evidence in the record, But we're here on a motion for summary judgment, and all the inferences should be taken as favorable to the plaintiff. At this stage, and at the stage where the decision was made, now the situation that was discussed by Dr. Coney, where Rita Gosch said that Kaufman gave different reasons, that's certainly something that, if there's no merit to it, a fact finder could weigh the evidence and decide that maybe that was not the case. But as far as summary judgment goes, all inferences should be taken in favor of the plaintiff.
Okay, thank you. Thanks to both counsel. This case will be taken under advisement. Proceed to the second.